Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Discover the world's leading brands at bionic.radio.
We are at Something Else Productions in fashionable Shoreditch, or is it Hoxton? Anyway, we're delighted to be wherever we are, and thanks to Steve Ackerman for welcoming the Radio Today roundtable for September. I'm Trevor Dan. Let's see who else is round the table.
Hello, I'm Caroline Raphael. I run Dora Productions and make programmes for mainly the BBC. I'm Vice Chair of Audio UK, and I'm also an Associate Lecturer teaching audio writing at St. Martin's.
So you'll be plugging the Audio Production Awards?
Oh, yes.
But not right now.
I'm Chloe Straw, so I'm the Head of Content and Production at We Are Grape. So we make a lot of kind of youth music and culture programmes for people like BBC Radio 1, World Service, Spotify, Red Bull and Copper.
And you used to work here?
I did. I worked here for a long, long time. This is the first time I've been back here since I left, actually.
Has it changed?
It doesn't look like it has, but I'm sure it has.
It's cool, though, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's very cool.
And so did you, Nikki.
I did, yeah. I loved it here.
Introduce yourself.
Oh, I should do, shouldn't I? I'm Nikki Birch, and I currently work as an exec producer at BBC Research and Development, and I also have a small indie on the side, Rosina Sound.
So we can talk to you about Alexa. We'll come on to that. I want to talk about some of the new shows that have launched, some of the many new radio stations. But can I start with politics? I don't want to turn this into Brexit cast, but here we are recording the day before there might be a general election announced. Who knows? I'm just wondering what you all make of the way that radio is covering some of the political stories which are around at the moment. This is perhaps the most constitutionally important week of my life. I can't remember anything that compares apart from maybe the middle of the 1970s. Is radio any good at telling us what's going on? Let me start with you, Nikki.
I think I listened to a really impressive interview this morning with Philip Hammond on the Today programme, and I did have that moment where I had to stop and I had to tell my mum, who was visiting, to sort of be quiet. And that was really powerful, and his emotion was really powerful. And I really bought into that, and I thought, gosh, this is really interesting. And you're telling, this is a new moment that you're delivering this really important message. And you're basically saying that, you know, you don't back the Tories and you feel that there are sort of people, I can't remember the phrase that he used, but they were kind of incomers.
He talked about, you know, not Ari Vist. What did he call Dominic Cummings? He called him an entryist.
Entryist, yeah, into the party who were doing damage. And it felt this. That felt like a really live moment that we, and you know, something that only radio could give, and a podcast in that instance couldn't do that. So I think that was really exciting. I would feel, however, other stations I listen to a lot, to Five Live, and the sort of Brexit barometer thing I feel find is a bit tired, and it's basically, and it's often, here's one view, here's the opposite view, here's one view, here's the opposite view. And it just feels quite hard work to listen, because I don't feel like I'm being galvanised in any particular way.
I think one of the interesting things is how radio stations love to have the politician on, whether they're as powerful as Hammond was this morning or not, rather than getting their own correspondents on to actually analyse and interpret it for us. I think that's possibly the success of Brexit cast, that we don't really want the politicians on because we don't trust what they say, but we can trust the dare I say it, experts.
Yeah, and I think when Laura Koonsberg comes on, you always go, okay, well, yes, here she's here, right, the big guns are out, yeah, brilliant, let's stop and listen. And that's exciting, and that's great because she's been elevated into that position now.
Chloe.
So I'm going to take a slightly different view on this. I don't listen to a lot of news on the radio, I have to admit. I think the way it's portrayed can be very intimate, but I feel like a lot of the time I fall between different providers, if that makes sense. So the way that I would generally listen to news, I quite like listening to the World Service, because I find a lot of the stations that focus purely on the UK are really, really inward looking. And I feel that they obviously, at this moment in time, perhaps it's good to be inward looking, but I just feel like they have a very kind of self-involved and quite narcissistic view of the country. And I think that I don't want to hear that. I kind of prefer to hear much more of a world view about it. So I'm perhaps that not that good to comment on this.
I'm very interested in that, though, if I may stop you, though, because I think what you say might reflect a lot of younger people's views, which is we're always told that the BBC and other news providers should get out of the Westminster bubble. Maybe what we should do is get out of the UK bubble.
You do have that classic thing where kind of you know, if a terrorist attack happens in the UK, you hear a huge amount about it. If something with, I can't think of an example, but like a much bigger death toll happens outside the UK, it's just not reported on as much. And it feels like, should it be less important? Should it be given much of their time?
Christchurch, I thought, was a good example, that we heard nothing but Christchurch for about 48 hours and then it just disappears.
Yeah.
And Mumbai and all those kind of issues. And the World Service is great, isn't it, at keeping you a bit more abreast about what's going on outside of the UK as a whole. So what happens when the news comes on a radio station near you? Do you just put your fingers in your ears?
No.
Nina, I'm not listening.
It's not that. I think the way I consume audio is more different. So I don't have the Today programme on every morning because I've got three screaming children. So I'm not adding more screaming voices into that mix because I'll go completely mad. So a lot of the audio that I listen to is much more on demand. So I'll listen to podcasts in the car or on the tube on the way to work. So I potentially don't consume as much news at all. And I think probably the way that I consume it more is also via like the LBC videos on Facebook and things like that. So perhaps the way that I consume it is less radio driven. I'll also wake up in the morning and often look at the Guardian website or the Times or the Sun. I try to kind of spread myself around a bit so I'm not just getting one view. Obviously, being a classic media lefty liberal, I could spend my whole time on the Guardian, but then I'm just getting fed what I want to hear and there's no point in that.
So. If you were programming a radio station for young people, let's say you're about to be the new controller of Radio 1, which, who knows, you might well be.
Great appointment. It's great, isn't it?
She's doing really well. Would you run the news at all? I ask this question because I just don't know why radio stations still have the news and the travel and the weather and all those traditional things.
Wasn't there a lot about that recently? I can't quite remember. I think there's a big debate about it. I mean, is the BBC...
Probably on this podcast.
It's part of the agreement, isn't it, with the BBC? So you kind of have to. But if you didn't have to, I would say yes. I mean, it's really tricky. I think it's important to know about the world, but I think increasingly people find out about the world in different ways. I mean, and it's not... I think it's not just an age thing. So my 19-year-old sister listens regularly to the Today programme and Radio 4, and it might just be that she's far better educated than me, so that's why she listens to it and I don't. But I think the point is that people consume in different ways. So there's not kind of people won't listen to Radio 4 because they're, you know, 40 and under. But equally, I think people pick and choose a lot more.
I saw a nice tweet this morning. It retweeted Sarah Sands, the editor of the Today programme, saying, coming shortly on the Today programme, Philip Hammond, Justin Greening, a long list of dull people. And it was retweeted by somebody who said, thank you, that's why we're listening to Radio 3. Caroline, I'm going to accuse you of being a Today programme consumer.
Yes, I am. I'm the traditionalist. I realise just how old I am listening to other people talk about how they consume. I'm the daughter of a journalist. I was brought up in a house. So literally, he waded through newspapers and he wasn't there very often. He was off doing exciting things. But I still have those news on the hour sort of programmed into me. So it's 1 o'clock news. It's the Today programme. I wake up to the Today programme very slowly, I might add. If I've missed the 10 o'clock news on television, which drives me mad, but I find myself watching it, then I absolutely listen to the midnight news. In fact, I think, if I was to suggest anything, if you wanted a snapshot of the day, the 6 p.m. bulletin on Radio 4, and particularly the midnight one, are brilliant roundups of what's actually happened that day. You don't get a lot of analysis. Funny enough, I would slightly agree with you. I do want to hear the politicians at the moment because it's on the record. And increasingly, as things get more and more febrile and more difficult, I want to be reminded that X, a month ago, was saying that they would not support, you know, the closure of Parliament, they would not support a no-deal Brexit, and now this is where they are. I think it's really important. I think news people are having a tough old time. I mean, talk about management from the top down. You know, if Boris decides he's not going to talk to anybody, it seems to give everybody else carte blanche so that they're not going to talk either. And in a democracy, this is appalling.
But then you have someone like Jacob Rees-Mogg doing his own programme on LBC. And did you hear the clip from yesterday?
With the doctor.
Yeah. Do you want to explain that? It's had a, I can't, you might know the details.
He was a neurologist, I think, wasn't he? And he'd helped to write this thing called the Yellowhammer Project report, which said that basically bad things would happen in the event of a no-deal Brexit.
Yeah, and Rees-Mogg just called him a Ramona on air, didn't he?
He did.
Cut him off.
He said he was a midget or some such term. A Muppet, I think. Yeah, did anyone hear Eddie Mayer's bit with Billy Joel?
Yes, I thought that was completely brilliant. And
it
also
was. Just tell us
shot.
What happened then.
So he said that he hadn't been able to get all these people on, and they went to a clip of Amber Rudd having said one thing and now standing somewhere else. But it was also rather beautifully but simply shot, because it was just Eddie alone in a studio, and then it went to Billy Joel behind them all, the lyrics of which has helped me was something along the lines of
song about
honesty. Being honesty. And there are all these people, as I said, who'd said one thing and now doing something
they
else.
They'd all said, basically, it's a travesty if you prorogue Parliament.
Yeah.
That would never happen. Yeah. We would never do this. And then one by one, obviously, they've all now
they've
stood
all
up, stood by that.
Now, would the BBC have run that little clip?
I can imagine that Eddie might have pushed for it if he'd still been at the PM, because he has that brilliant nerve and bravery. I'm not sure many other people do. Whether they would have done,
it's a moot point,
know.
Isn't it?
I
can
really
see somebody at the BBC going, but, you know, you can't do that. That's editorialising.
But one of the things I think radio is still important for news, and personally, at the moment, I want the politicians on, is that they are given time. I mean, watching the 10 o'clock news, those really cut down interviews, and then, God help us, Vox Pops somewhere.
Which, real people.
I'm all for real people, but then talk to them properly, give them time, really explore their decisions and how they're feeling or their uncertainties. But these tiny little clips, sending really, really good journalists out to somewhere for something that's going to turn into about 30 or 40 seconds, I just think it's a complete and utter waste of time.
It's the Radio Today roundtable for September. We've got Caroline Raphael, Chloe Straw and Nikki Birch here. Let's talk about the continuing extraordinary burgeoning of radio services. Every time you turn around, every time you look at the Radio Today website, there's yet 10 more stations occupying one niche or another. Chloe, I'm going to come to you because I just think that it's your market, this, the idea of more and more niche services. Why is it happening and is it a good thing?
I think more services is always a good thing from my point of view. I was thinking back to 5 years ago, and the market was basically the BBC, commercial radio stations. And that was particularly as a producer and thinking purely of kind of from a selfish point of view of job prospects, that was all there was. So you're like, either you do this or indies as well, but our clients were the BBC. And now, not just thinking about these stations, but thinking about audio as a whole, like, it's incredible. It's so good for the industry. What a position to be in terms of the kind of world of podcasts and the world of, I don't know, just all of the audio world. So for me, I think the more the merrier, to be honest. I don't know if that's kind of a naive view, but to me, that feels like the more choice that you give the listeners, the better, basically.
Are you attracted by any of them yourself? There just seem to be a growing kind of nicheness. You know, you wonder if the next launch is going to be, you know, Radio Grateful Dead or Radio Cat Stevens or something.
I mean, it works for me because I'm quite an odd, I can't remember what the name of my generation is. We're kind of a really small one in between, like the baby boomers and the millennials. I can't remember. Anyway, it's we're sort of a 3-year weird generation. But there's nothing in the mainstream that caters for me. There's like, I love Radio 1. It's a massive client for us and I always worked with Radio 1. I'm too old for Radio 1. I'm too young for Radio 2 because I tune in and it's, you know, I'm not there yet with Radio 2.
They'll hate to hear you say that because they think that they are now making programmes for you.
Or maybe, yeah, maybe I need to be more aware of them or there needs to be more of them. So,
can I ask her a question?
Yeah.
Is it because of the presentation or is it because of the music?
Both, I would say. So I think, like, I love Zoe. She's too cheery for me at that time in the morning. Like, I'm sure that works for a lot of people. It doesn't for me. Definitely musically, it doesn't quite work for me. But I think the niche stations work really well for me. So, like, one that I would listen to is Kistree, which has been around for a while, but it's kind of a good example of a niche station because it's the sort of music that I was always into and I still like it. And it's not really catered to in a kind of mainstream manner. And I'd kind of almost love to have music like that, but with more presentation, because obviously with a lot of those stations, there's not the kind of, you know, there's not the resources to kind of have a really in-depth presenting.
Well, they make
like
a big
that.
Thing, don't they, of saying, oh, we've got a live breakfast show, as though that's a big thing.
Well, it is for them, isn't it? Because
whereas Scala has decided to go, you know, full on, full service.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, aren't you fundamentally, Chloe, saying you like radio to have better music?
Yeah, I think so.
And, I mean, that's what you're saying.
Yeah,
really.
Or just music that's relevant for me, because it always feels like, sorry, I'm rambling on about myself, but maybe it's something that I've always felt, and it's perhaps where these new stations do offer things for people like me, because it is more choice. Particularly, you know, Six Music's brilliant, but it's not the music that I'm into. So I feel like it's always been very focused at me, like, oh, you're not that, you must like this. And it's like, well, no. So for me personally as a consumer, it's a great thing because it means that there's a lot more choice for me.
So as Morrissey said, hang the DJ because the music they constantly play says nothing to me about my life. Is that 30
years? We shouldn't be quoting Morrissey
say,
these days.
Not anymore.
Difficult though.
But it's a point though, isn't it? That it is the music they play that matters.
Yeah.
But I kind of take Caroline's point about Radio 2, that there is beginning to be a little bit of a mismatch. On the one hand, it's, oh, here's a new one from Little Mix. Mm. But then, hello, I'm Ken Bruce, and I'm even older than God.
I mean, they've got a really difficult task, haven't they? I think any station that has an age range that wide has a really difficult task, and many of the BBC stations do, so.
And I'm afraid, for me, I still go back to my CDs, but I go back to Spotify. And I make my own playlist. And if I want the 70s, I want my 70s, not theirs, or the 80s or the 90s, because actually I think this definition of generations and music, but I noticed this with my son, who's now in his very early 30s, but through the early days of things like, was it one of those stations he shouldn't have been listening to online that constantly gave him a virus on his computer, Napster, whatever it was.
Napster.
Yes, I was forever rebuilding his computer because he got viruses. But what he did, and then a very early use of Spotify because he loved music, was listening to music across generations, across genres, across world music, listening to French ballads from the 1930s and something by a band that I'd never heard of from now. And I think that I don't feel as if I need music radio stations. I don't listen to music radio stations anymore. I use Spotify and I use my CD collection still. That's where I get my music from.
Okay, I will disagree. I think I also have loved music, but feel like I have less time to discover music. And whilst music discovery services like Spotify do offer lots there, but I think there's definitely a room for music radio. And whether that's an online radio station like Worldwide FM or NTS. Please edit that. Like NTS.
Anyone who says that guarantees it'll
it's
be
not in there. NPR's great too. But anyway, like NTS, and so those are kind of good kind of core music products. But also, you know, lots of people don't have the time and they just don't have the inclination and they just want to turn something on and they just want to be entertained. And I think, you know, Heart 70s, Heart 90s, that's fantastic because it gives people the kind of what they want easily without having to explore. Not everybody has the time or the inclination to explore, and they want to be entertained, and they want to have the travel, and they want to, and all those sorts of things.
Gotta
so
say,
I think it's
though,
valuable.
You need a bit of exploration to find all these stations now, don't you? You know, if you've got a DAB radio, it might not get DAB Plus, and it might not be on your car. It's getting almost as complicated as 103.7 and all those old numbers.
It is, you know, and actually this will lead us nicely into the next bit. I'm longing for the day when you have a very good voice control in the car where you can just say, turn on whatever I want to listen to. See what I've done there?
We'll come back to that after this commercial message, which is not from Napster or indeed from LimeWire.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
Radio Today. It's the September Roundtable from Radio Today. Caroline Raphael, Chloe Straw, Nikki Birch and me, Trevor Dan. Nikki, you trailed the next item, which is about voice recognition and all that modern stuff, which you work in.
I do, yeah. I used to work in radio. Does it show?
It does. Yeah. But now you've dropped in from the future. So thanks.
Yeah. Well, I...
What's it like out there?
In the world of
in
voice.
In the future.
Well, the future. It's really exciting, actually. There's loads of really interesting work being done by people all around the world exploring the future of audio and how we're going to consume and access our content in the future. It's brilliant. And the BBC is, I mean, without sort of ringing their bell, because I'm being employed by them at the moment, but they're doing brilliantly. And they only recently are sort of, or they're starting to drip feed some of what they're doing publicly. So the first, I think, press release went out last week about the fact that they are creating a voice assistant called Beeb.
Beeb.
Hey Beeb. Yeah.
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 And this is the thing that's going to recognise accents.
Well, I think that was a sort of
me duck.
That's something that has been people have taken from it. But what they're doing is in order, I think the reason why they had to release the press release is because they have asked a number of the BBC staff to record their voice saying, "Hey, Beeb," from all around the country. So it recognises accents from all around the UK. And that is so it recognises the accents of the wake word, which is "Hey, Beeb." Like you might say, "Hey, Google, Siri, Alexa." Hopefully I've turned them all on right now. But
you're being cursed by everyone listening to this.
Yeah. So this was just that's a kind of one aspect of what it will do, and it's going to be really interesting. A public service voice assistant. And just to be clear, it's not hardware. There's not a BBC is not creating a little box that is going to sit in people's living room alongside other devices.
Okay. Let me ask everybody: which of us actually says, "Hey, fill in name here"? Give me Radio 4 or give me Classic Chilled or give me Magic FM or whatever. I mean, I do. Or it's my default way of getting on the radio now. I just walk into the room and go, "Hey, thing, give me thing."
Yeah, so there's just to be clear, just for those of you who aren't in the black studio room that we're in, Chloe and Caroline have shaken their heads. But I think it's if you have a device, you may use it. If you don't, you won't. But they have replaced radios in people's homes quite rapidly the last few years. And I think what the BBC is doing is it's looking beyond those devices, because we should be able to say to our computer, to our phone, to any way we access sounds or iPlayer or anything like that, turn it on, the TV, turn it over. So it's just, if you think it's just another form of control of how I can access my content, can I play me Zoe Ball at breakfast? You perhaps could say Chloe if you were going to start listening to her. So it's just a way, if you think about it as a way of accessing.
You do that then, Chloe. You're a modern person. I mean, I can see why you would not want your children to be able to say, "Hey, Alexa, send me 12 boxes of Cocoa Pops."
Yeah.
But why wouldn't you have one in the kitchen?
I think I'd be really happy to. I think it's just never, it's not a stage we've got to.
Sponsorship opportunity.
Yet. Yeah, yeah. No, I think it's just not. And I think in my head, I've always just thought they're too expensive. But I've never looked at how much they cost.
£50.
So, 50 quid.
There you go. 50 quid. 20% of UK adults say they now have them. So it's quite significant. And if you think also, I'd say probably 90%+ have a phone which has a voice assistant on them anyway. So we all do have access. And it's up to us to decide whether we want to use them in that way. And I'm not suggesting people should go out and buy these devices. I'm just saying that the BBC is looking at it as one way of interacting with our content. And it being far better, I would argue that there's a public service body behind that, i.e. in terms of looking after our data and understanding how to use and sort of the trust in public service, I'd hope, is better than it might be if for some of the other platform providers. And I think that's why it's important the BBC is in this space.
Can I ask you this, something, Nikki? Does this suggest that the Googles and the Amazon devices don't recognise regional voices or certain classes? Because I would say, what do you then do about class?
I think this is something that's been picked up by the press in a slightly wrong way. I think this is about, it recognises regional voices because it will need to in order for us to, for everybody to understand, sorry, in order for the BBC's voice assistant to understand "Hey, Beeb" in the UK. It's not suggesting that Amazon or Google do or don't. I don't think it's saying that. It's just one factor that it needs to progress in order for it to work. So we need to have a wide range of Glaswegian, Cornish, Northern Irish accents for it to understand. Otherwise, it won't work. And it has to work with the BBC. It has to work for everyone.
And it's partly to get the BBC streaming off tune in, isn't it?
that, I think, is one outcome that is going to happen, yeah.
But there won't be a box. You see, I won't have any of these things in my house. I don't trust them at the moment. I don't want more Wi-Fi going around my living space into the air I breathe. And I don't trust them from a data point of view.
I don't think you can breathe Wi-Fi, actually, Caroline. I'm no scientist.
In the air that I can breathe, I just think there's enough stuff going on. For me, if this is still going to be channeled, it's simply a kind of something, an app within something that is owned by Amazon or by Google.
Not necessarily. But
they're not going to produce any hardware. That's a bit I don't understand. And that may be being unfair to you.
No,
it hasn't been released yet, what it is that this is actually for.
I think it's it will, at the moment, it will be allowed. The aim, as I understand it, is that you can access the voice assistant on other platforms. Okay, so it could be that it's Amazon, it's whoever lets them, right? There's a bit of obviously negotiations to be done, but it could be that it's in your car, it could be that it's on your laptop, it could be it's on your sounds app. So it's just a way of accessing BBC content in anywhere and any way that you might access content. So I think it's very difficult for people to conceive, but don't think about it as a box anymore. The voice assistant is a sort of amorphous cloud like person, not Beeb, that hopefully will exist in as many places as possible to enable the BBC's content to be heard, your content that you make and, you know, that we all make and create, to be heard and to be accessed in as many places. And also, ideally, a lot more beyond that as well. So I think, you know, I'd hope that that's the sort of the start, but there's lots of other opportunities and ideas that they're kind of thinking about as well.
We need to get on with hearing what you've been listening to, but you've got 30 seconds to plug the Audio Production Awards, Caroline.
Yes, I'm going to plug the Audio Production Awards. You can now enter. You go onto the Audio Production Award website. All the entry regulations and qualifications are there. All the categories are there. And it's a marvellous celebration, genuine celebration of a year of audio across all types of audio, actually, and a wonderful evening.
And the event is in November?
It's November the 28th.
So it's the only one this year, unlike the ARIAs,
yes,
which is now next year.
Yes, that is true. It's the only one, and it's well worth putting in. And it's a real celebration of a producer's work and company's work as well. So
thank you. A commercial message, and then let's find out what's been tickling people's eardrums.
Let me tell you all about a great way to connect in fantastic quality audio. It's called Clean Feed, and it's great for doing OBs, interviews for your show, maybe co-hosting from somewhere different, or getting some guests on the line for a podcast. It's been designed for radio people and for podcasters, and Clean Feed is really simple to use and means you can connect in live quality audio just using a browser. Clean Feed doesn't cost you anything to get started. It'll only take 30 seconds to sign up, and within minutes, you'll be doing your first live interview or recording. Find out more at cleanfeed.net.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macasso.
I'm going to start with you, Chloe. What have you been listening to?
So there's two things I'm going to talk about today. So the first one is a We Are Great production, so it's nice to talk about what we do.
Of course.
So we made a daily podcast for a brand called Copper 90, which is a big football brand, kind of worldwide football brand. And you all have noticed it was the Women's World Cup recently, the FIFA Women's World Cup, something that was kind of really, really popular, which was great to see. And so we went over to Paris with Copper, and they had a big kind of clubhouse over there. And we did a daily podcast from there, which was brilliant. From a kind of scale point of view, it was an amazing thing to do. We had to kind of build the studio and do everything like that. And it just worked really well. It was with Monkey, who used to be on Radio 1, and with Heath. And they're a new pair of presenters who kind of worked together. It was great working with them and just brilliant topics. Really well worth a listen, I would say.
Here's a clip.
Because we went to the match.
Yes, we did go to the
game. We made it back in time. Not enough time to shower, but enough time to come back and show what it is that we're going through. But
yes,
do we have five things?
No, we don't. But this is the one thing that you need to know going into your day.
Which is?
The USA won.
Wow.
Again.
That's it. We didn't have a pause for that one. Do we need a pause? Do we need to do the
keep going?
That's the NASCAR. That's the NASCAR transition.
Whoa!
If you're not first, you're last.
Yeah. Yeah. The U.S. is winners.
They are winners.
Is are the U.S. are or is?
They are.
Would you say is or are the U.S. is winners?
Are they are winners?
Are
like a pirate.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, they're winners.
Just one question. It always intrigues me. What came first in this? Was it the sponsor? Was it the presenters? Was it the idea?
It was, so I was still on maternity leave when this happened, but from what I understand, it's generally a little bit of everything. So I think the team at Grape had had the idea for doing a football podcast from the Women's World Cup, so a daily one, because it's obviously a big event, makes sense to do something like that. We know Monkey really well, so we've worked with her a lot over the years, and she has a relationship with Copper. So I think we were, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think we were kind of discussing the idea with Monkey of doing the podcast as well. And I think it basically all came together like that. So I think the answer to your question is it varies. So
let's have an idea from Nikki.
I have been listening to, I've been re-listening, which is very unusual, right? So you have another listen to the George the Poets podcast. And I listened to it again this summer because I kind of wanted, I had some time by myself and I thought this would be, it's a very reflective, very emotional podcast, and it won all the awards at the podcast award. And I, you know, I was just still completely amazed by it. If you haven't heard it, you must. And then yesterday I listened to an interview with him on the FT Culture Call podcast, which is presented by Leela Raptopoulos and Griselda Murray-Brown. So one in America and one in the UK. And it was Griselda who did the interview with him. And it's just such a good interview that I just thought I'd, you know, share it. If you've listened to George the Poet podcast, listen to the interview, because he talks about the sort of death of two people on his estate and how that's moved him. But he also talks about how he knows there will be more. And he talks about and how that feeling is. But then and then he talks a lot about life after winning all these awards and how the challenges of kind of not pandering towards the intelligentsia, i.e., you know, people, I say I'm calling me intelligent, sorry, but like basically, you know, the middle classes listening and going, "You're wonderful, George, you should be on this, this and this." And him thinking, well, I've still got to think, I want to represent the people on my estate because these people are still dying and I want to be able to speak to their community and not the sort of podcast community, and how am I, you know, everything I'm doing now, I really need to think hard about how I'm sort of maintaining my my audience. And he talked about being stopped and searched the day after he read a poem at the royal wedding, you know, and sort of the sort of chaos in his life and the kind of and the contradictions. And anyway, so it's a really fantastic interview.
I felt lonely, and what that encouraged me to do was stay in my room and write poetry, which wasn't such a bad thing. I remember posting my first poem online. It was called Powerless, and it is a tire, it's a rant. And someone, a well-meaning white girl in my college, I put this on YouTube. It's the first time I put a poem on YouTube. She pulled me to one side and she said, "I saw your poem. It gave me a lot to think about. I think, however, you are in danger of feeding into very destructive narratives for your community." And what she was trying to say is there are a lot of white people that will use you as an excuse to discredit and turn their back on and reject the experience and the trauma of your community. This was the first time I'd ever been, because I didn't grow up with white people like that. Mm. This is the first time this was presented to me. I was used to performing to young black males who knew exactly what I was talking about.
How did you feel when she said that to you?
My first reaction was defensive. I was just saying, "You just don't understand." But she really meant well.
Yeah, I mean, she might have meant well, but also, why is it on you?
Yeah. So why is it on me is a fair question, but this is an unfair world. And the reality is that it is on me. I really need to demonstrate to the creators from my demographic, from my community, that there are different ways that we can package our story that mean that we don't have to mindlessly pander to market forces that might encourage us or nudge us down familiar, easy territory, lazy commentary on the nature of our struggles that just rehash arguments that were established in the 1990s from the first pioneers of hip-hop. So I'm saying to my rap contemporaries, mm-hmm. we not only have the option and the opportunity to get really creative about our story, we have the responsibility, and it is not fair, but life is not fair.
There's George the Poet, courtesy of the FT. Caroline, one from you.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about audiobooks. I think it's really intriguing. And there is a reason on a radio podcast why to talk about audiobooks. First of all, audiobooks was a word that was always used by the publishers and by the commercial audiobooks. I think it's really interesting. I think it says something about the importance of audiobooks nowadays in our culture that the BBC, and in particular BBC Sounds, have now appropriated the word audiobook. which they would never have done before.
Readings, they were called.
They were readings, absolutely. I used to commission a lot of them. And they were wonderful, but it's interesting that they are now have this kind of category of audiobook. On top of that, they have just released probably about 7 or 8 full-length, unabridged audiobooks of classic novels, which again is really interesting because one of them is Jane Eyre, which I've started listening to. It's a perfectly good reading, nicely produced, as you would expect. But it wasn't that long ago that the BBC Trust wouldn't allow the BBC to do unabridged books because it might have affected the commercial market and we weren't supposed to go there. You go onto Audible and there are over 20 often brilliant recordings of Jane Eyre with people like Tandy Newton and Juliet Stevenson, who is like the queen of audiobooks. So I think it's really interesting that a radio broadcaster now is being allowed to go straight for that commercial market. I'm sorry, and the other reason for raising it is that in the end, there are only so many hours we can listen. We've only so many pairs of ears. And we know, going back to the discussion about voice-assisted technology, that audiobooks are extremely popular on there, that I think audiobooks, if they aren't already, will start giving radio a run for its money, that you will choose to have your audiobook playing while you're cooking instead of a radio station. But two brilliant ones I would recommend. Queenie, which is read by Siobhan Marks, which is the Candice Carty-Williams bestseller, which is a wonderful book. And also Inheritance, which is written by Janie Eclair, which is a gorgeous saga with deep, troubling family stories and humour, as you would expect, but beautifully put together, which Jenny also reads.
The man seizes her under the arms, and Belle can feel her top gape away from her skirt. How embarrassing! Someone, the waitress presumably, has her by the ankles, and she feels a sudden chilliness as they haul her up the shaded stone steps towards the house. So she's not completely out of it, she deduces. She can still smell the intense sweetness from the honeysuckle that clings to the grey stone wall, hear the crunch of footsteps on the gravel drive. The waitress is gripping Belle's puffy ankles with difficulty. Belle can see through half-open eyes that she is a pretty girl, with tattoos that probably made her mother cry. Japanese dragons and geisha girls run riot around her sturdy arms. This is ridiculous, Belle thinks. The poor girl was hired to carry large white plates of intricate canapes, whirls of piped chicken mousse on tiny squares of pumpernickel, topped with dill and a sliver of cornichon, not cart-heavy middle-aged matrons around. Perhaps tattoo girl will nick a bottle of fizz to make up for it later. It wouldn't be difficult. There are bottles cooling in plastic bins all over the place.
Nikki, you wanted to say something about audiobooks.
Because I spent the summer listening to audiobooks too, and I found it just wonderful, a wonderful release. And if anyone who hasn't read yet Normal People, by Sally Rooney, the audiobook, who is being read by Aoife McMahon, is just amazing, and I really recommend it. It's Stop Your Journey and Listen to Awkward Teenage Sex Scenes moment. It's absolutely fantastic. And I'm totally with you, Caroline. I think they're wonderful.
I'm going to add one as well, if I may, which is the BBC's version of À la recherche de temps perdu by that Marcel Proust bloke. And I've tried, as many people of my age have over the years, to read it. Never got anywhere near the end. But I have got to the end of the audiobook. And now I know what it's about, because the resolution of the bloody book is in part 10. And here's a clip.
Yes, I feel happy when I feel the past reform and actualize itself, giving me for a moment something whose value is eternal. This is what I want to bequeath. Time. Everyone feels it.
Feels what, my friend?
I will describe people not according to their bodies, but according to their years. For example, you see two men walking down the street. They both have black moustaches. But one man is 20 years older than the other one. This is what we see, that one man has had 20 years added on him. So that if we occupy a small amount of space with our bodies, we occupy a huge amount of time with our life. And this is what we end up carrying with us.
So that's what it's about. You don't need to listen to it now. Chloe, let's have your second choice.
So my second choice is a podcast by or on NPR called But Why? So it's for little kids. You can imagine exactly what it's about. So you get the, why is that? Why is that? Why is that? And I mean, what a simple but absolutely brilliant idea. It's one of those ideas where I think, damn, I wish I'd come up with that one. So a couple of topics that they'd covered recently, how is paper made? What do mosquitoes do in winter? Just all those wonderful questions. And my kids, who are 6, 4, and 1, will sit and very happily listen to it half an hour. It's a lovely thing to do for half an hour. Sorry, it's a lovely thing to do at the end of the day. I think it's interesting as well because the US obviously has a much bigger podcast market at the moment than the UK. And a lot of the kids' podcasts we listen to are US ones. So there's one called Story Pirates as well and one called Circle Round. They're all really lovely. But I would love more UK podcasts for kids because it's just, you know, it's nice to hear things in kind of different accents.
This is But Why, a podcast for curious kids from Vermont Public Radio. I'm Jane Lindholm. On this podcast, we take questions from curious kids all around the world just like you, and it's our job to find answers. This week, we're answering questions about something we all use all the time.
My name is Eliza from Morgantown, West Virginia, and I'm 6. And my question is, where does paper come from?
Hi, my name is Mason. I'm 6 years old. I live in Auckland, New Zealand. And my question is, how is paper made? Thank you.
My goodness, a lot of you want to know how paper is made. All right, you got it. Now, most of the paper you probably see every day, newspaper, construction paper, regular white paper that you use in school, even art paper for projects at home or in art class, is made in really big paper factories.
Interesting you're saying that your kids will listen to podcasts, and there's not much, exactly as you said, in the UK. There's fun kids are making their own, some of which are very good. Mm-hmm. All of which are very good. But there must be a market. Because BBC, Caroline, in your day, if I may say so, used to do a lot of children's programmes.
Yes. Well, I helped set up and then dismantle the old Radio 5, which was for very small children and then teenagers. I tended to work on the older age group. And it was dismantled to make way for Five Live and Rolling News.
But it's back because it's now on demand. So you can sit your kids down and say, here it is.
And there's lots of masses of audiobooks. Certainly, I worked for Penguin Random House, helping them kind of grow their audiobook business just after I left the Beeb. And a lot of it was for children. And they were extremely popular. And we did a big promotion and research project with Mumsnet. And of course, it gets your kids away from the screen.
Yeah, I would suggest, Chloe, buying a little device, a voice-activated device, get an Audible account. And, you know, I mean, I'm only saying it, but it's true, on message. But, you know, I mean, it's incredible. The kids will just sit and listen and do the colouring in and that's it.
We've got
12 hours later.
I've got Audible on my phone, actually. So we listen to it in the car. Long journeys, I find it. A lot of the Julia Donaldson books are the favourites at the moment.
Goodbye, Pingu. He's a man of the past. Nikki, we've got another choice from you.
Okay, I'm also going to represent something that I've made because actually, a bit embarrassingly, because Matt Hall came on a podcast that we did a couple of years ago, one of these roundtables, and he also talked about this podcast, but I'm going to mention it again. So I, in my spare time, I produce a podcast called Backlisted, which is a books podcast sponsored by Unbound with John Mitchinson and Andy Miller, who present it. And it's about kind of bringing old books to life. And the reason I really wanted to say is it's yesterday we released our 100th episode, and it nicely coincided with 1 million listeners, thank you very much. Which for
do you know why you've got 1 million listeners? Because it's bloody great.
It's great. It's really great. And the episode that we put out yesterday is the Philip Pullman talking about 17th century book called The Anatomy of Melancholy, which is, I mean, wonderful. And it sounds like, oh God, that'd be far too heavyweight, but it's just beautiful. It's talking about depression and how we wrote about depression in the 17th century. And then, it turns out it's really beautiful. Philip Pullman, we went to his house to record it. It's wonderful. And, you know, he then goes on about his love of Amy Winehouse. And, you know, it's really a wonderful listen. It's very somber, but it also, you don't need to have read the book. I think most people will never read this book. It's, you know, 1,500 pages, you know, but the programme is very beautiful, and I really want to say well done to the team.
One of the things I love about Backlisted is nobody ever says, going to have to hurry you, or briefly if you can, or it's just kind of, you know, keep going. And if it takes you a little while to get interesting, we'll stay with you till you do.
Yeah, and also the enthusiasm. The whole thing is, you know, we are going to be enthusiastic about books. Other people can critique them. You know, we're not going to lay into it and be negative. It's very easy to be negative. But when you hear people going on about how exciting and wonderful something is, it, you know, you go and purchase. And there's lovely, you know, there's piles of books in people's houses all around the country, all around the world, that have been bought specifically because of this programme. I think it's something to be very proud of.
I'd intended to read this.
Hooray for Backlisted.
The Anatomy of Melancholy this year, but this rather bumped it up the list. Thank you very much.
It's a book that perhaps needs a bit of bumping, because although it's universally, well, not universally, by those who have read it, hailed as a great work, not many people have read it because it's so big.
Do you think it is the size, or do you think people are just kind of, they find the whole idea of a book about melancholy? Maybe melancholy is, it's not as clear to modern readers what melancholy is. I mean, melancholy means sad now.
Yes, it's not a great sales term, is it? Melancholy, of course, is one of the humours of ancient and medieval medicine. The idea that the body is governed by, I'm going to have to try and remember what they were. There was black bile. There was blood. There was
cholera.
That's the kind of temperament that
yellow bile.
Yellow bile as well.
And one more for the full house.
Forgotten it.
Phlegm.
Flair.
How nice. Yes, that's. this is now not scientifically held to be entirely reliable as a way of making yourself better if you're ill.
Just before we go, I'd really like your views on this, which your BBC licence fee has paid for.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
You name it.
JC!
There's no I in team.
How can I help you?
But there is in Diva.
Guys, keep being fabulous.
Radio 1 presents the Gemma Collins Podcast.
Hi, guys. It's the GC. And basically, oh my God, what a day it's been. So I woke up and basically Arj breathed on me and his breath smelt so bad. I was actually sick. Not being horrible, but I'm not blaming all of him, because we absolutely have been laughing our heads off about it all day. But literally, I woke up and he breathed and said good morning, and I started to retch, and then literally I just spewed all over his bedroom. But this is like 6 a.m. in the morning.
Okay, I think that's probably enough. I make no comment, but I just wanted to
hear
your views.
Come on, it's great.
Nikki.
Yeah. Okay, hands up. I watched all of Love Island, right? This, yeah. And I listened to I listened to the Love Island podcast. I know that Gemma Collins isn't from Love Island. I don't actually know what she's from. But what I mean is, once you bought into these people and you bought into their lives, you just want more. And I think, you know, it's quite funny. I laughed there. She was funny. You know, I'm not going
So she's from Towie, which I did watch. I don't anymore, but I used to. I mean, it's entertaining, isn't it? And that's one of the jobs of the BBC, is to entertain. And I think that, you know, the BBC has recently got into the podcast market a lot more. And I think that it's good that they're gunning for it. You know, you've got to give it to them that they're giving it a good sort of go. So,
okay, Caroline.
Oh, goodness. I don't even know who she is. Go on. There you go. I've just condemned myself. While I don't think that the BBC licence is about market failure, i.e. doing what nobody else can do or can afford to do, this feels like a bandwagon being followed. And my favourite phrase is, if you can see a bandwagon, it's already passed. So, yes, I do query, possibly for the Radio 1 audience. I don't know whether she's on Radio 1 or whether it's just a completely separate podcast. I can see how it could be quite entertaining. Personally, I've got better things to do with my time, to be absolutely honest. I worry about it. But that's only because I'm seeing programme budgets being cut for different types of programmes in order to make what I genuinely believe that the market could make quite happily and get really good advertising for. So why not let them do it?
It's a bit like something from the Today programme there. Did you notice? We had on the one hand and then we did it on the other hand.
I mean, I'm not saying that it's the BBC that needs to do this, but I'm glad it's happening. I'm glad that basically audio is able to be funny and to be lighthearted and to be real and just to be kind of like reflective. And, you know, for so many years, it was just so tame and uptight. When actually the conversations that we were having in real life were about spewing up on your bed and about somebody farting. That was life.
And I would totally agree with that. We used to have a phrase, I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but when I was part of the team that were reshaping Radio 4 and we were listening to what had gone before, which to be fair, quite a lot of us have been making for, we had this, I think it wasn't me, it was somebody else came up with this phrase, Radio Timothy, as a way of describing what we were trying not to do. So yes, I completely agree with you. I mean, these are the kind of conversations that you hear on the bus and you really don't want to get up and get off the bus because there's some extraordinary, usually a phone call, actually. But I'm not sure whether the licence fee should be paying for it.
Thank you, Caroline Raphael. Thank you, Chloe Straw. Thank you, Nikki Birch. Thank you, Gully, who drove the show very impeccably. And thank you to Steve Ackerman and everybody at Something Else for hosting us. This has been the Roundtable for September. I've been Trevor Dan, and the next voice you'll hear will be that of Stuart Clarkson.
Yes, thank you very much, Trevor. It is indeed. And still to come on this podcast this week, David Lloyd's Radio Moments, James Cridland in just a second. Let me tell you first of all, though, that next week on the Radio Today programme, a legend from the 80s and 90s, and he's back on the air as well with Radio 2 now. It's Gary Davis. He'll be talking to me for next week's Radio Today programme. So join us for that.
I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. Something called BBC Notes was posted on the BBC's R&D blog the other week. It's a web app that shows text, images and links to enhance the listening experience during live events, live broadcasts and on demand. There are quite a lot of these types of things appearing. Entail is a podcast app which is trying to do much the same. When you listen to Serial, then you see the places that they're talking about, for example. A podcast movement, I saw the Adori platform, which does much the same kind of thing. And it isn't, of course, the first time that this has been thought of. 15 years ago, I was playing with Nokia Visual Radio. And there's also DAB Slideshow, a method of adding images to broadcasts in countries that have enough bandwidth. Now, there are a few issues, I think, with all of these types of services. First, is it a rich enough experience? Does it add to the user's enjoyment of the audio? Would it hold their attention or offer interesting, glanceable content? Second, is it easy to produce quick visuals at scale and ideally automated? And if it is, does it fulfill that first requirement, that it's good enough? And third, does it give enough value to fundamentally change the user's experience with audio content? I mean, if the benefit of audio is that you can enjoy it while you're driving or walking the dog or writing a script for a podcast, isn't this a benefit that we should be making the most of and not diluting with visuals? Now, some people are doing this really well. Radio 538 in the Netherlands plays music videos and has a full TV-like experience that doesn't appear to get in the way of the audio. But when it's static images that demand interaction, that seems, I don't know, less exciting to me. So perhaps we should play to our strengths, because otherwise, in this most rarest of cases, video might kill the radio star. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcast news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. And now on the Radio Today programme, here's David Lloyd. Radio Moments,
David Lloyd. The Heart brand has recently been flexed to provide more services.
Heart 70s is here with your non-stop 70s feel good. Make it.
And the journey for that brand started from West Midlands beginnings this week, 25 years ago.
You're listening to test transmissions from Heart FM, the new soft rock station for Warwickshire and the West Midlands. Due to start broadcasting at 7 a.m. on September the 6th.
If you like music first thing in the morning, you'll love the Heart FM Breakfast Show with me, Nick Wright. Plus, we'll keep you up to date with all the news and travel information that you'll need.
It was a great format. It was a great company. The station was in a market I knew well. I'd got a chance to come and start something from the ground up. That was fantastic. That was a great opportunity to build something from scratch.
Programmer Phil Riley reflecting on the birth of Heart this week in 1994. And with the London station launch a year later, arguably the start of true commercial radio brands. Other regionals began this week in 1994, Jazz FM and across in the northeast.
Good morning, this is John Morgan on Thursday the 1st of September. It's 7 a.m. and a star is born.
One of my nightmare memories of Century in the Northeast in 1994 was that we were launching with new technology. It kept going wrong and new computers. And luckily, when you see things in retrospect, at the start of the station at 8 o'clock in the morning, things went okay. But by 5 o'clock, the computers packed up and our two-hour news programme couldn't get to air because nothing would work. So we had to play music which was well against our format, and I remember going on air singing, "Always look on the bright side of life." Happy days, memorable days, sleepless nights.
The birth of the Century brand with the legendary John Myers this week 25 years ago. It was to be the first of three Century operations, providing their mix of music, chat and sport. And that station, of course, in the Northeast was later Real, now it's Heart. 1979 now, and a new voice for the BBC Top 40, but I think it's one we've heard before.
And this is Tony Blackburn with a brand new Top 40. Compiled for the BBC by the British Market Research Bureau. And in this week's chart, six new entries, 13 go down, 16 on the way up, and 5 non-movers. And down from number 36 to this week's
number 40.
Tony Blackburn taking over the Radio 1 Top 40 this week in 1979. And back then, of course, it used to borrow Radio 2's FM frequencies.
And welcome to listeners on VHF who have just joined Radio 1, not only for the Top 40, but for the rest of this evening. And don't forget, you can hear the nation's top chart show in super stereo on VHF.
In fact, it wasn't until this week in 1988 that Radio 1 had its official FM switch-on day.
Well, it has to be said that this was the week that Radio 1 made history with the great FM switch-on, of course. Central Scotland, the North and the Midlands joined the London area in listening to Radio 1 in brilliant stereo. As Newsbeat's lunchtime bulletin explained, the historic day began at 8 o'clock in the morning when Bross, with a little help from Mark Goodyear, switched on the transmitter serving Scotland.
3, 2, 1, in goes the switch.
The radio of the future is here.
Today's big switch-on means 65% of the country's population can now hear us in stereo. And from tonight, you'll be able to watch Top of the Pops on the telly and hear it in stereo on the network. And as Simon Mayo explains, Stereo Radio 1 will revolutionise radio listening.
Obviously, stereo singles have been around for an awful long time, but I think there'll be a greater stereo awareness because just talking to people on the phone this morning, they've been saying, at last, we've been waiting for this for so long, you know, year by year we said, oh, when will Radio 1 get FM? So I think perhaps while it's still a bit of a novelty for Radio 1 to be FM, there will be all sorts of twiddly little bits happening left and right and all that.
So. And the fun thing is that I can be over here in this part of the room.
And I can be well over here in the corner as though I've got nothing to do with it.
And we can talk across the room, can't we?
Yes, we could even change sides if we were very clever.
Let's see if we can change sides.
Radio 1, discovering FM stereo at last, 31 years ago. The broadcasting legend David Jacobs hosted his first Pick of the Pops this week in 1956. Back then, it was on a Wednesday night.
Hello there. Once again, it's Welcome to Music, the Pick of the Pops way. We welcome, in the first half of the programme, several new discs to the hit parade. Anthony Newley's EP containing the four songs from Idle on Parade has joined the bestsellers proper this week, so let's spin the title song.
Delightful. David Jacobs, who began his Pick of the Pops stint this week in 1956. And this week, 57 years later, he died, just weeks after this last show.
Bringing this week's collection to a close. I'll be here at the same time next week, so until then, or whenever, on behalf of my producer, Alan Boyd, it's good night from me, David Jacobs.
David Jacobs, who died this week in 2013, those voices half a century apart. This week last year, a dramatic one in radio circles.
And if you get to the top of your favourite mountain and you just stay there, then you become a mountain observer. And I need to keep climbing. I've got to keep climbing. So I'm going to go and go again. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go and go again. And I'm going to start up on a brand new adventure. And I've loved it here every second. Every second.
And Chris Evans has just announced that he's leaving Radio 2. He's presented the station's breakfast show for 8 years.
It is 8:40, and Chris Evans is packing in Radio 2. At any rate, he announced it live on air a couple of hours ago.
Yes, and this news is, you know, beats any day of the week. It's Europe's biggest radio programme. He's surprised.
Is it really biggest audience in
biggest
Europe?
Audience in Europe. I've spoken to studio managers there. I've rung talent on the programme, as they're known, but, you know, some of them are good. And no one saw it coming.
And we don't know why.
Well, I met him last month. And
this is Virgin Radio News.
I'm Jenny Barsby. Good morning. Chris Evans is returning home to join Virgin Radio. He'll present the breakfast show from the new year. Evans says it's exciting to be returning to his spiritual home. He announced the news earlier, saying you have to keep shaking it up.
Well, there are lots happened in a year, hasn't it? So, with BBC Radio Bristol making its debut 49 years ago...
People will listen with appreciation to recordings of this opening day and say with real interest, well, that's how it all began.
The original LBC losing its licence 26 years ago.
The decision was made at a meeting of the Radio Authority yesterday, but wasn't announced until this morning. The authority isn't obliged to give a reason for deciding LBC shouldn't keep broadcasting on its two frequencies. LBC's chairman, Dame Shirley Porter, who took over earlier this year, is shocked and saddened. She says London will be the loser.
Jonathan Dimbleby, beginning his stint on Radio 4's Any Questions 32 years ago.
Welcome to the Wash Common Community Centre on the outskirts of the Berkshire town of Newbury.
And Atlantic 252, launching on Longwave 30 years ago.
Remember now, tonight, while we're no longer burning up the airwaves, you burn up the telephone lines and tell all of your friends Longwave is the place to be.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.